Okay.
Welcome to Highway Diary.
Hello.
I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. This is episode 242 with Angela Sharp. How do you do?
How do you do? You know, I thought that you pronounced your name Hollerbach.
Everyone calls me that. It's technically Hollerbach, but I mean, I've never been introduced by a black person that didn't call me Eric Hollerbach when I walked on stage, so it's just kind of like, whatever, you know what I mean?
It just sounds like you're being snobby, like Eric Hollerbach. Like,
yeah, it's just technical. I don't know what to, you know.
It's fine. You're going
to
be okay.
I've been told to just outright change it to Hollerbach, you know, and I don't know. You know, I think it's like, for me, it's like the same reason I've never got a nose job, even though my nose is disgusting. It's like, I just keep it real. You know what I mean?
Your nose
like,
isn't disgusting unless it's filled with stuff.
It's often filled with stuff. I have allergies. Well, get me around a cat and it's just a cavern of leaking it.
But that's just noses. That's noses.
Are you allergic
everywhere.
To cats?
I'm not. I have a cat that I sleep with. I have another cat that I sleep with. I love cats.
And your nose is clear? No
totally,
problem.
Totally clear.
Okay, let's get down to brass tacks here. We're just bullshitting around. You're hilarious, and I'm a huge fan of yours. Okay, let's start there. I first met you here and at the Old Glory in Keyport, New Jersey. Not New Providence, New Jersey.
Fuck
you went to the wrong Old Glory today. It's okay. We're good. We're on track here. So I met you here, and boy, were you down in the dumps the first time I met you.
That may have been the worst day of my life.
You just lost your position at the McGinley Square Pub in Journal Square.
Mm-hmm.
You and the owner of that place had a disagreement, and then you went to rehab. So can you just tell me what's been going on?
Yeah. That was the ultimate low point. It's weird that you met me on that day.
Yeah.
But you were very nice, and I remember the exchange was very nice. Anyway, I'm deflecting. Okay, so I was extremely manic for a little while, and then I came to a hard crash.
Mm-hmm.
And
just check in. That we're good. Keep going.
Yeah, to put it very simply, I crashed and burned after a period of mania, and had to, it led me to the psych ward, and then from the psych ward to an outpatient program, and from the outpatient program to a rehab because I was not behaving myself, and then now I'm out of rehab, and so far I've been behaving.
Mm. Now, behaving, meaning what? What? When you were manic, what was going on? You were hyper-productive writing songs, or what was the mania?
So the good part of mania is you are, exactly, you're, like, super productive. For example, at McGinley, I mm-hmm. produced a sextival. So it was four comedy shows in one day, and I did it in a week. Like, I produced the entire thing in a week. All four of the shows sold out. I paid all of the comics. It was mm-hmm. it was a massive undertaking, and I did it like without sleeping. You know, you just like, you don't sleep, you have more energy, you're on top of the world, you're more productive. But the other part of that is like, you're super impulsive. So like, you know, I drive with friends around and I just drive on the other side of the road just for fun to make them laugh.
Yay.
And shit like that.
Right,
Where like, you just can't get high enough. You know, you can't, you're untouchable.
You're like, hey, whatever I want to do right now, that's what I'm going to do. If I want to drink, if I want to do whatever. Oh, look, there's a stranger in the road. Hi, homeless person with needles in it. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. Anything.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And like, and you don't think of the consequences ever. So what happened with me is I got more and more like, things started to fall away more and more. Like my husband was getting like, what the fuck with me, and rightfully so. I totally stormed out of McGinley because I was pissed. Like, I just, everything started to fall away, and then I was completely on my own.
Mm.
But I was still manic. I was still in that headspace. So it led me to a suicide attempt. That's what I mean. Like, mania can be, it can be all those really high, you know, buzzing things, but then it can also be really dark in a really strange way. Like, you know, Do you know? Do you know what I mean?
I've definitely dated somebody who fits this description. Oh. And they were more like borderline. But like what you're talking about, the impulsivity, like she would cheat on me all the time. And recently she's been hitting me up on email and it's just like, you know, like she's like, oh, well, life is too short to hold a grudge against me. And it's like, man, I taught your kid karate. I taught him how to swim. And you like, you know.
Was it fun for, was her impulsivity fun for you?
Yeah. You know, she had this weird way of, like, well, this was in New Orleans, right? And I had been, like, banned from five clubs because I'm, like, standard issue Jersey. And if you're a hipster douchebag in New Orleans, that's, like, a huge problem. Oh. So I made this joke about Caitlyn Jenner. They're like, that's transphobic. There was one guy made fun of me at the Hi-Ho. I made fun of him back. He banned me for 2 years because he's an asshole.
Damn.
And this girl, when she came into my life, like immediately always like, oh, why are those two people looking at you weird? Oh, they're pieces of shit. I used to be a mean girl like that bitch. And I was like, whoa, like this girl gets it. You know what I mean? But then it was like, but then I would see these, like, you know, it was like, top of the top, everything, like, she got me, everything was perfect, and then, like, I would be, you know, Uber driving, or I'd be doing homework, and she would call, I'd be like, I can't come over, I'm doing homework, remember I said I'll come over Tuesday at 2? No, come over right the fuck now, I'm your girlfriend, no, I'm doing homework right now, like, I really just can't, and she's like, quit, you know, quit, or like, don't go to class tomorrow, it's like, my grades are perfect, and I have scholarships that I have to keep. Like, yeah. I can't just see you right now because you want me to see you. So, like, that impulsivity or that manic thing where it's like, no, you have to see me now. It's like, and when I would say no, she'd be like, okay, fuck you. You've hurt me because you didn't see me, so now I'm going to cheat on you.
It's all or nothing.
And then it would be like, she'd be like, who are you with right now? And I'd be like, what? Like,
yeah.
I ran a class. I'm in class. Why? She's like, who are you? No, what girl are you with? I'm like, and she would invent in her own head that I was cheating on her. Mm. When that was, I was too fucking busy. I worked 5 days a week. I went to school 5 days a week. I did homework 7 days a week. I did stand up every night. What do you think? Like, time wise, I don't know what you're talking about, but yeah. So you went to a inpatient in Florida.
Yes.
And that was for drug rehab?
It was a dual diagnosis. So like drugs and mental health. My thing, like my problem has always been more my mental disorder than my, drug addiction. Like when the way that I'm addicted to alcohol is like when I'm drinking like an alcoholic, but I'm not like every night, like, oh, I gotta get it. It's like, it's more, or if I'll go on like a binge where I like can't stop.
Right.
But when I take a drink, I have to drink until I pass out. I have to drink until, you know.
Yeah. And that's something I totally relate to. Cause, last time, I don't know, we spoke a couple weeks ago and I was like, oh, last night I threw up and this morning I threw up. Yeah. I got to take 6 months off. I made it for sure a week. And then I started drinking again, but now I'm like, I'm not drinking tonight. And now I'm going like, okay. Maybe taking 6 months cold turkey was, like, unrealistic, but I definitely have to rewire. When I stopped drinking for a week, I was having dreams of, like, I'm at the Comedy Store, I'm drinking, I go on stage, I murder my set, I go backstage, like, Joe Rogan's giving me a high five. He's like, you want to do my podcast tomorrow? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, thank the beer. And I'm like, beer. And I woke up with the most insane cravings where it's like, you know, so.
Do you consider yourself an alcoholic?
You know, I heard Dr. Drew one time say, he's like, if you have one parent who's an alcoholic and you think you have problems, you are an alcoholic. And so my dad is for sure an alcoholic. Mm. I also think he has antisocial personality disorder and maybe narcissistic personality disorder. And so then it's like, yeah, I probably am. Mm. By that low bar of a diagnosis, for sure. But it's also like, do I want to be dumb, fat, and turn into my father who's justified in yelling at waiters and who's justified in, you know, yelling at whoever he wants. And he's like, no, I had to do that for my moral superiority. It's like, no, you're a drunk cunt. Like, you know, it's obvious to everybody that you're a malignant narcissist cunt. Like, what you think is happening is super not happening, you know? He also, my uncle growing up was this guy called Jeff Brzozowski, who was not my blood uncle, but my dad's best friend since kindergarten. And my dad, like, cut off all communication with him because Jeff Brzozowski had the audacity to invite my mom, who just divorced my dad, to his daughter's wedding. So he invited both my mom and dad, who just divorced. And my dad calls up Jeff, his friend from kindergarten, and says, no, 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 we're friends. You're not friends with my wife, so you're going to invite me, not her. And he goes, no, we've known both of you since high school. You're both invited. And he goes, you're no friend of mine. Click. That was like 6 years ago. Still not, never talked to him. And it's just like,
so much resentment.
That is what antisocial personality disorder is. It's like you can't find, and there's every hill is petty enough to die for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's no argument that you won't take to the death because you're fucking right.
Do you feel at all like you lean, you ever lean into that? You're ever out of danger?
Because of my genetics? Yeah. I feel like because both of my parents, my mom is more of like a gaslighter, which is like, if you're like, hey mom, this is hurting my feelings. Oh really? Well, I gave birth to you. I'm your mother. It's my divine right to hurt your feelings. And so they're both narcissists. And I think it created me into a codependent. So, which means like I am only attracted to narcissistic women. And then when they start to take advantage of me, I'm like really confused. So like I have a joke in my act where I'm like only attracted to crazy girls. Because it's like, there's, I don't know, like that girl who was like abusive to me. And like, I'm like, hell yeah, this girl gets it. Like, so I think like the emotional abuse is what I was raised with and it feels like comfortable to me.
Yeah. It's hard to break out of those cycles.
Yeah. So I feel like I have to traumatically reenact, that my neglectful parents in a relationship.
Do you go to therapy?
I did, all through New Orleans, you know, and that, and he told me he diagnosed me, Dr. Reed Doster in New Orleans said that I had codependent personality disorder. But I think that's accurate. I think when I'm not in a relationship, I'm actually pretty balanced, but I get lonely. But when I am in a relationship, I go all the way like, do you need me to drive you to work? Do you need me to wash your cat? Do you need me to, what do you want? Like, because I'm just like, I'll give and then it'll feel normal. Yeah. And then I'll be like, that's what makes me feel good is to like give to a girl. But I feel like I don't wait for signs of reciprocity.
I gotcha.
You know what I mean? So then I get taken advantage of, and then I get... But it's like because I'm only attracted to girls that will do that to me.
Is it with friendships too or no?
What do you mean?
Like, are you? Do you feel like you're codependent in your like friendships with dudes?
I do get butthurt like if my friends don't call me back. That really annoys me. Like if it's like I give you a phone call, like... call me back. If I give you two phone calls, if someone doesn't call me back in 3 days, I start to be like, what the fuck is wrong with this person?
Do like, you know? Think that that's like problematic?
Yes.
That you do that?
Of course.
You, okay. Well, that's good. The awareness is there.
The thing I'm really focused on is like not, just trying to choose a girl better. But right now, like, so I filmed a stand-up special, and it's going to come out in the summer. And, like, until that's out, I'm saying no dating, no nothing. So it's like, for me, now I'm in this period where it's like, and I'm trying to reset my brain.
Yeah, I think it's good, at least, that, like, first of all, you have the self-awareness. And second of all, like, you don't need to be in a relationship. It's more that, like, comes out when once you're in one.
Yes, so yeah.
I feel like you're pretty healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't need to be. And that's that was weird about being with this girl she had a kid and everything. And like being with her, it's like she needed to see me every day, like 7 days a week. And I'd be like, I only have two. You want to take the two or like, you know, it'll be quality time. I will never cheat on you. You're getting two.
Yeah.
And then the next girl, it was like, I drove her to work every day. You know what I mean? And then, so that's how, we saw each other every day, but we only hung out like twice a week because that's all I had time for. But I made sure to drive her to work, so at least we would see each other at that point. And then she went and cheated on me too. So it's like Then I don't know. I had this little fling with a girl, like, I don't know, 6 months ago, but it wasn't serious. And it was, like, just sexual, which wasn't so bad. So now I'm like, okay, I wasn't codependent with that girl. We just kind of had a fling, and it was a sex thing, and then it was over. And I was a little depressed when it was over, but I was like, I felt like I got over it more quickly. Anyway, this is about you. I want to know what happened in Florida. We have like 6 minutes before you have to run into the show.
Six? Okay. What happened in Florida? I was in rehab.
The dual diagnosis. So what was it? Is it group therapy? What, like?
Yeah, it's groups all day, and every day is the exact same. It's, you know, Groundhog's Day. It's like every day is this, it's this group, that group, this group, that group. And each group is different, you know? There's a lot of processing. So like each day, which is awesome. I love processing. It's just a group of women, you know, women are with women, men are with men.
And is all the women like bipolar? They all have the same diagnosis?
No, not everyone is dual diagnosis. Some of them are just there for drugs, and some of them are like fentanyl, like come in, you know, yikes, 90 pounds fentanyl, like it can be, yeah, it's humbling, you know. And then there are some people who are fucking crazy. There was a kleptomaniac who was like stealing people's like underwear, and it was insane. Like she got like escorted out. It was crazy,
right?
And then there's all kinds of personality disorders.
And how long were you down there?
A month, 30 days.
So that was every single day you had your psychology, your sort of like group therapy to do with your mental diagnosis, and then you also went to like Alcoholics Anonymous type of?
Yeah, every class was about drug, like getting the drugs out of your brain and body. I say class, every group was about that. And the mental health sort of played into it. And then you had some free time. It wasn't very interesting.
it is interesting.
And then you do right, go to right. AA. There's AA and NA. I wanted to say this. I went on Halloween and I was there during Thanksgiving. So that was hard. Because the days are the exact same. There's nothing different about the days. Right. And I have a 5-year-old, so that was especially.
You had to be away from her.
Yeah.
Now that you're out, you have outpatient, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you just see a therapist like 3 days, 3 times a week?
So it's 3 times a week. I have 2 groups a day, and then I see my therapist once. So I'm doing like 20 hours. It's my life. It's my fucking full-time job.
Yeah.
Therapy and AA and I should come out of this like squeaky clean and like saw like fucking, you know, scrubbed of my personality, but I'm not. I'm still awful.
Well, I gotta tell you, we gotta run in and do the show, but I remember the day that you were down in the dumps. I think I may have seen you at McGinley Square, but I definitely saw you here, and you were like, the dread of like the mistakes you'd made or the coming off the mania. It's like when you're manic, you're up and up and up, and then there's a crash, and then you're like, I'm worthless, right? So I think I caught you like in
you
the down.
Me the fucking down.
Yeah, and you're like, oh my God, my life is terrible. But then I see you at the stress, and you're like sober, you're happy, you do your songs, you fucking killed, your set was hilarious, and I'm like, oh wow, okay, maybe we can maintain this Angela in this like sort of stable. It didn't seem to work. Like whatever they did seemed to work, right?
I'm on so much medication.
Oh yeah.
I'll pause
okay.
for there.
Yeah, we gotta go there. Do the show at Old Glory with Waldo Maldo fucking Naldo. And we'll be back with more podcasts. Stick around.
Guys, do we believe in body positivity? Your dick isn't small, it's just party size. Your boost isn't loose, you just got generous thighs. Your stretch marks tell the world that you used to be fat, but you're not anymore unless you got thin. Then you got fat again. And that's alright. Somebody's searching you porn tonight for all your insecurities that you'd rather hide. Somewhere some girl is searching for your little dick, and she's probably effing at it, but she's rubbing on her clit. Whose pussy? There's a million. clean hard cups, and for every little dick there's a shallow G spot. For every stretch mark, a baby is born. Don't forget about the children, even when you're watching porn.
So now you're in groups, you're an outpatient, and then you see the therapist. Now, what is the therapist, are they asking you leading questions? Like, so what do you mean by that? Or I wonder if that means this. What do you think they're doing?
No, I fill out a form before every session, and it basically, like, I have to rate my mood, I have to state whether or not I'm having suicidal thoughts, so they get this like idea of where I'm at mentally, and then we just like talk about topical shit. The thing is, like, my therapist now, she said either we can do like the day to day and like work on, like, you know, just work through what you're going through right now, or we can dig into your trauma. Which do you want to do? And I asked her, what do you think is best? And she said, let's do the day to day. Because, like, the day-to-day means, like, she works with me on, like, skills that I can use to get through certain situations. And then the idea is that, like, once I've learned enough skills, I'll be able to handle the trauma work. And the trauma work is going to be with another therapist and another method of therapy.
Okay. So are you doing CBD, cognitive behavioral therapy?
There is CBT, but primarily it's DBT, which is dialectic behavioral therapy.
Which just means talk therapy.
No, right? Dialectics mean, to be very specific, it means like, it means you can have one feeling and then you can also have another at the same time, which is a weird way to say it. Okay, so like, let's say, I am frustrated with my marriage because, and this isn't true, this is just hypothetical, like, oh, my husband's being a dick, I'm frustrated with my marriage, and I'm also grateful for everything he does. So like, you can have it's all about like radical acceptance. It's all about like just accepting things as they are and dealing with your feelings as they are, and allowing all of your feelings.
I'm not a licensed therapist. Okay, can we do some trauma work? Can we go into a little bit of that? Is it childhood? Like, what?
So my first incident of trauma was like a sexual abuse, and that happened when I was 10, and that was one incident.
Was it a family member? Or?
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah. but my parents handled it very, very, like, effectively. They put me in therapy. They dealt with the situation like, you know, leave it to Beaver, like, perfect, you know. So I sort of got through that, and then my parents divorced, and so they separated, and I started using drugs. My mom started drinking, and I had a boyfriend who committed suicide.
What age?
That happened when I was 15. So I had a boyfriend, and it was a very, very, like, intense relationship, and he was very intense, and then he got arrested, went to jail, and hung himself in a jail cell. And the suicide note had, you know, his family, and then the last thing was to me, and it said, no one will ever love you like I love you. And that, I was 15 at the time. And like, I, you know, to be really specific, this is, are you okay?
Yeah.
This is a lot. But for me, the most traumatic part of that was the day of his funeral. I kissed, his mom was like, oh, you can touch him. It was an open casket. And she's like, kiss him, go ahead, kiss him. And I kissed his dead body. And then that night I was just like in pieces. Like, I just had no, I couldn't.
Is that so that his soul could haunt you? Why did the mom make that suggestion?
I don't know. We were all fucked up. You know, we were all.
She was out of her fucking mind.
Yeah, you can imagine.
Right.
You know.
What do you think his? It sounds like a very like narcissistic, possessive sort of.
Yeah.
What do you think his diagnosis would be if you look in the DSM?
He was bipolar. They diagnosed him bipolar. Long story short, he was like he was a recovering heroin addict. He got back into heroin. He stole shit. He was just a bad boy, and I thought that was hot.
Right.
And like sexually, it was really intense. It was just a lot. It was way too much.
Did you guys lost your virginity together?
No.
No? Oh, okay. What was he arrested for?
Stealing.
Theft. And so those charges, he was like, this is ruins my life. It's over.
He got arrested. Well, he started stalking me, because I told him like I couldn't do this anymore. He was, you know, he had been arrested. He was using heroin again. And he started stalking me. So he would...
So you, like, broke up with him, and then he got arrested, and then...
We never really officially broke up. It just sort of... It was like he got arrested, and we couldn't be together anymore. And...
Because he's going to jail.
It was just a mess. It was a mess. And he started coming to my window at night. And eventually it got so, like, scary for me that I told my mom. And my mom got a restraining order on him. Mm-hmm. And so we went to court to do the final restraining order. This is the last time I saw him. And he was, like, in the orange jumpsuit. He had been arrested. And the judge granted the final restraining order. And then 6 days later, he hung himself. Yep. He was on suicide watch, and he asked for a pen. And the guard went to go get a pen, and he did it with a bed sheet. And actually, interesting fact... he's, because of his suicide, he's one of like 16 suicides that happen in New Jersey that way in jail. And like he hung himself with a bed sheet from like a rafter kind of thing. So now because of, he's a part of this improvement that they put like netting over the cells so that people can't do that anymore.
What, so that they don't have access to the bars above their head to hang something? So there's a net between the bar and the thing?
Yeah.
You can't cut the net open?
I mean, I'm sure, I think it's probably like wires. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. Whatever. They created some...
Yeah. You can go to them and say like, why don't you cut the net?
Yeah. No, I'm not on suicide watch. And then do it. What, do you believe that you were bipolar before... these traumas or after? Do you think that induced it in you?
I think I always had a personality of like all or nothing since I was a kid. And I think I was prone to it, and then the traumas exacerbated that. Because it was like these things were such high, you know, intense emotions, especially with Lewis. It was a very, like, very intense situation that, like, brought me high and low, high and low. So, yeah. And at that point, your brain is still developing. Mm. So you're, like...
Your cerebral cortex isn't fully developed, and then you're riding his manic and then depressive things with him, right? Because you're, like, tangled at that age, you know?
Yeah, Yeah, looking back, it's just fucking crazy.
It was also during the divorce, you know, which is
It was during the divorce. Ugh. Oh, and it's not even over, I'll tell you more.
Go on.
The night of his funeral, I went to my mom for comfort. She was passed out drunk, and we got in this big argument, and she told me that she hated me. And that was, like, one of the most hurtful things. I mean, I live that every day because she died of alcoholism a week after I graduated. A week after I graduated high school. She dropped dead.
Oh, my. She just must have been just so miserable, like, not without, do you have siblings?
I have an older sister.
Did she say that she hated your older sister as well, or just you?
No, she was drunk. I mean, it's the kind of thing, like, she was drunk, and I'll be honest, like, as a mom now, it's been really healing to, like, understand where she was coming from, you know? Is this supposed to be funny?
No, not, I mean, it could be anything. The podcast I have after this is, you know, a super conspiracy podcast with a guy called Benjamin Fulford, who's... Somebody tried to murder him, so I'm going to play clips of him, his they went to Italy together to go on like some kind of Da Vinci Code type adventure, and the one guy tried to murder him. So, and then he just did a podcast recently where he's like, I didn't try to murder him, here's what happened. So I'm gonna play those clips for him, you know what I mean? It doesn't always have to, sometimes it's a murder mystery. Sometimes it's you know, emotions. But look, you're a comic, you're hilarious. We'll you know, I hope I'll be able to record your set tonight and play some of your songs. But look, this is where it comes from. I think it's like, you know, stand-up is so extreme where it's like you want to inflict happiness on other people in a way to, like, heal yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. Isn't that what's going on? Like, I think for me, I feel like because both my parents were, like, complete gaslighting narcissists who weren't capable of really listening to my dreams and aspirations, I'm like, I always knew I was smarter than them. I always knew because I read books and I didn't. And for me, it's like stand-up, it's like, it's my fucking turn to talk.
Yeah.
It's my turn to talk, and I'm going to inflict as much happiness as possible, get as much LPMs, laughs per minute. It's just like, I'm obsessed with it. It's like inflicting happiness on people and good humor, because I just felt like I was like so squashed as a kid. So for me, it's like healing. I think I see the same thing in you. So yeah, this is just the metadata of what happens in our head off stage, right? So I think it's all relevant.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, were you the youngest? Do you have siblings?
I'm the middle.
Okay.
So my sister's like 3 years older than me, and then my younger brother's 8 years younger than me.
Oh, wow. You're really in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. How are they?
They're great. I mean, I got a great relationship with them. My sister does online advertising, and they're starting a CBD business, and my brother works for the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. He's got his master in environmental science, you know? And, like, one of the things, like, you were asking me about my relationship with my father. Like, one of the things he did, like, so I shot my stand-up special. I spent $15,000 on it.
Damn.
I spent all of my money. I shot my special from L.A. to New Orleans to New York City.
Mm.
And we shot 50 shows. Mm. And then it was edited in 9 months. And then I put in a bunch of festivals. Now all the festival notification dates is another year of waiting. So I've just been, like, I finished it, and now I'm just waiting and waiting and waiting. This is the traditional Hollywood method of doing things. It's like making the best thing you can, put it into festivals. If they accept you, then maybe you can get a deal to on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime. So that's my goal. So, like, I just filmed the special. It was still being edited. And my dad, like, in a drunk rage, like, was like, you know, your siblings, they make a lot more money than you. Let's get to brass tacks here. A lot more money than you, okay? So, like, basically, like, you're the fucking... He's like, you gotta stop doing stand-up, okay? Just start doing... Get real. It's not working, okay? And it's like, my shit's... It's not even done editing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, call me a loser on this date, okay? Mm. This, like...
Give which, it a chance.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's not out yet. Maybe it would be out and would catch fire, but... So, to me, it's like, there were just some, like, unforgivable things where I'm like, I'm cool on, like, having a relationship with my dad ever again. I'm done with it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I know, like, and then later on, he's like, oh, I never said that. But it's like, no, we talked about it, like, so he kicked me out of the house one time in a rage. And then I went to stay at my sister's house. And then I was like, when I came back, he was like, oh, it must be brave to come back. It's like, I don't have a choice. I don't have any money. I spent all my money on my dream. You said, oh, don't worry. Come live with me. Come live with me. It's fine. And I say one little thing negative. You know, your siblings make a lot more money than you. So I was literally, like, trapped. Like, financially, like, he's like, look, don't worry about it. I'll pay for your cell phone. I'll have a roof under your head. Like, I already have a plan. So if I added a phone number, it'll be $15 a month. So I'll just pay for your cell phone. I was like, cool, great. He goes on his plan. I'm doing whatever. He gets that mad at me. He's like, I paid for your fucking food. I paid for your fucking cell phone. I put a roof over your fucking head. You gotta learn who butters your bread, bitch. This is when he screams at my face.
Damn.
So it's like, so now that I am on my own, I got my own little place in Edison. I like blocked his phone number. I pay for my own motherfucking cell phone now. So that after he screamed at me, I put my phone back in my own name the next day. Which, like, no, you can't scream. You can't say, oh, it's fine, and then scream at my face about it. I can't laugh that. He's like, what is that, your pride? I'm like, no, that's my fucking sanity, cocksucker.
Yeah,
that's my fucking sanity. Yeah. I can't have you have these these things over my head that you give good-naturedly, because he knew my exact situation. I was like, you know, at this date, my schedule will be... Like, when he's sober, he's, like, clear for a moment.
Oh, so he's drunk during all of this.
Oh, every night. And then he'll watch, like, you know, 50 hours of TV, and it's, just, like, a week, and then, like, be drunk, and then...
Is he retired?
He, like, flips houses and stuff like this. It's very part-time. He'll just basically sit drinking all day, and then when someone calls, like, another real estate agent, he'll be like, oh, yeah, you can... I'll give you the key box code if you want to look at the house. 8462. Mm. Another agent will show a house.
Do the work.
And then he'll be like, oh, okay, you want to buy it? Okay, let's sit down. So, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he does other side businesses, but he's lazy as fuck. And I work every fucking day. Mm. So, also, it's like, you know, how is, like, before I was in grad school and the girlfriends were like, oh, see me every day. Like, he wanted me to, like, talk to him every day and this and that. But I would go out and do stand-up every night. And then I feel like he thought I was ignoring him or not giving enough adulation for putting a roof over my head. But he's, like, capable of screaming at me. So it's like, I don't know. He's so volatile. Yeah. And I really think, like, there is something called antisocial personality disorder. That is what he has. And he won't seek treatment for it. And it just makes him a nightmare to be around.
Yeah,
so it's
sure.
like, I just can't. You know, the one thing that can fix antisocial personality disorder and narcissistic personality disorder is actually psilocybin mushrooms. When I researched it, like, shamanically administered or clinically administered mushrooms actually can just dissolve the ego, break it down.
That makes sense to you me, know? For sure.
Yeah, and like a retreat or like an ayahuasca retreat, these are the only... Because they go... Every book about this is like, talk therapy doesn't work. These people are too shit. Like, these people do not admit their faults ever, like, to the point of death. So that's it. So, like, when I'm like, how do I fix my dad? They're like, the book is like, no, you won't. Like, the medical research is like, you won't.
Would he ever take mushrooms?
No. Because, you know, I don't know. Whatever. I don't think he would. So it's like, okay.
What's your experience with mushrooms?
Fantastic.
Have you ever had a bad trip?
No. I think I've done three or so times. Every time was amazing. Mm. You take them, you walk in the woods, it's like transformative, you know? It's great. Have you had a bad trip?
I had, yes. My last one was bad. It started out great, like you're saying, walk in the woods. And then we got into a cab. It was in Montreal. We were at, it was like our anniversary trip.
Oh, wow.
We got into a cab, and being in the car just did something to me, right?
It's like every window is like a television. And then you're like, is this real? Like,
yeah, it was true. So, but the thing that got me was he was playing on the radio. There was this like segment about cerebral palsy. So there were like people speaking with cerebral palsy, and I hope I don't sound awful here.
It's very offensive.
Are you offended?
No, not at all.
but they were speaking, and I just like I felt like I was inside of their brain, and I could feel like where their cerebral palsy had like happened, and I was like, it just like
you became broken mechanism in their brain.
Yes.
with how arduous it is for them to make sentences.
Oh my god, it was horrible.
So I think that the mushroom like creates this like empathy vortex.
For sure, yeah.
That if you're in a weird setting.
Yeah.
You'll fall into a hole.
Absorb it.
That's why it's so important, like, set and setting, like, to be with good people that are, like, all smiles. I remember me and my roommates in Los Angeles, we all took a capsule and we're like, okay, what do you want to learn from Mother Mushroom? You know? And then we, like, lit candles and we were like, wow, I want to learn this. I want to learn how to do this. And then, like, that's what you experience when you were on the mushroom, you know? Because you, like, set the intention, right?
Yeah.
But, like, I would never, like get in a car.
Yeah.
I would never go in a building or busy street. No.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not made for that. You're supposed to be with nature, for sure.
Yeah.
It's a mushroom.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know? But I can see how it would help, like, an antisocial person.
But, you know, it's like, they say take lithium if you're having a psychotic, take this if you're that, you know?
I'm on lithium.
Oh, okay. But there is something, too, like, if you have narcissistic personality disorder and you take this, that will help that. I really believe in that. Like, with mushrooms, it's like, if you have this your brain chemistry is like this, it'll be helpful in this way. Right. That's it. I mean, you shouldn't go anywhere. It's not like you take it in the morning and then, like, get in your car. You know, it's like...
I've heard the same thing with ecstasy and MDMA.
Yeah, I've taken that one time. I could see that.
Yeah.
You're just, like, I remember I took ecstasy, and the next day I wrote my sister, like, a 5-page letter, and I put it in the mail about how much I love her. And she was like, wow, I got this letter in the mail. It's so lovey-dovey. This is not, I'm like, sorry, I was on drugs. I don't know. She was like, no, it was great. I was like, really? That's what happened.
Aw, that's adorable.
Yeah. I just, the next morning, I was just like, I'm just so grateful for the people in my life. Like, yeah, like.
Usually the next morning is when you have that, like, serotonin, like, depletion.
I don't know.
You were okay.
Yeah, I wrote the letter the next day. I was probably groggy, but I was like.
Still rolling.
I went to the spirit world, and now this is the information I have to transcribe.
Yeah.
And it was all about love and acceptance and. See, I feel like if, like, you know, my dad is such a miserable fuck that if his brain was, like, chemically, like, no, you're going to be happy as possible. You're going to live in ecstasy and bliss and MDMA-induced ecstasy. Boom. Then he's like, oh, my God, I didn't know what a miserable cunt I was yesterday. I didn't know this mind state was possible. Mm. So then when you know there's, like, a bridge to being a miserable cunt to being, like, happy, then you're like, oh, maybe I should live my life to push myself further along the suspension bridge.
You have the capacity.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what ecstasy did for me, is like, wow, my brain, I have the capacity to feel this good. Like,
yeah.
And that's not just drugs. Like, that is a real thing that's been unlocked, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I recently heard a comic tell a joke about antidepressants. And I loved it. It wasn't funny, but it was very, like, smart. He said, like, antidepressants, it's not like they make you feel better. It's that they release what you already have in your brain. So it's like, you already have all of this. You already have all of this capacity. Your dad already has the capacity to be this person, but what is it? You know, like, what the fuck is, like, Is it our brain? Is it our mind that stalls it? Is it our body, like our physical chemistry? Is it our spirit? You know, what is it? What is it that keeps us back?
I don't know. And I've thought about that, where it's like when he's yelling at me, I'm like, what? Like,
spirit. In rehab, they talk a lot about having a spiritual malady, like addiction being a spiritual malady, and I love that wording.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Are you spiritual at all?
I was raised Catholic, and then, like, when I was a freshman in undergrad, like, you know, all the pedophile scandals happened, and I was like, oh, okay, why aren't they, like, putting them on the torture machines and, like, ripping their arms off? They're, like, paying people to shut up? I was like, no. And, so for a long time, I think I was atheist, and then I saw this shaman, actually. My sister used to live in San Francisco, and she, like, yelped a shaman.
Mm.
And I saw this guy, and he, like, hypnotized me. So I was like, hey, do your shaman thing. And he's like, no, it doesn't work like that. Like, we have to talk, and then we find a problem. So it comes out that I have, like, a tremendous fear of failure, you know? Mm. So he's like, okay, lay down. So he lays me down. He hypnotizes me. And literally, I go in the rainforest, and there's, like, a gazebo. And there's this demon who, like, I look at it, and it's like, rah, you can see me, you know? And this demon had, like, hair. You know the movie Predator?
Mm-hmm.
Predator versus Alien?
Mm-hmm.
So he looked like Predator, and you know his dreadlocks? Like, they were, like, interwoven into my musculature, okay?
Mm, yeah.
And then when I saw him, he was like, and, like, his dreadlocks, like, receded back into his head, and he was like, ah. And then I hear, like, the shaman's, like, voice, like, go, your services are no longer needed. And there was, like, this divorce ceremony where, like, I literally saw this entity, like, shoot off in the distance. And I woke up and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then, like, still, it's not like I have access to this ability to, like, remove fear from my brain today. Like, I think that really helped me with stand-up, you know?
Is it because of that?
I believe so, yeah. Mm. I believe, like, if I'm nervous in stand-up, I go, whoosh, and I just remember this demon shooting off, and I go, nope, that doesn't affect me anymore.
It's possible, yeah.
Yeah, you know? But it's like, I mean, coming from, like, a Catholic spirituality background, where it's like, Jesus absolves your sins, to, like, this other thing that's, like, not sitting in pews, it's like a guy hypnotizing you. But that felt more real than anything.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if there's angels and demons or entities. I also did martial arts for a while, and we would always, like, pray to Father Muay Thai. And Father Muay Thai is just this guy, like, in a badass fight position. And it's like, then when we would practice Muay Thai, it's like, I feel like I'm inhabited by like, Captain Kick-Ass. Mm. You know? So is that, I don't know what that is. I don't know.
No, I think you have a strong sense of your spirituality, it sounds like.
What about you?
Yeah. Recently, I've gotten more connected.
To what?
To my higher power. You know, like, AA, it's all about your higher power. And that's it. Like, that's the only thing that's going to cure you of this, or at least keep you from drinking or drugging. Like, the first step is we admit that we're powerless over alcohol, and that our higher power is the only thing that can restore us to sanity.
Mm.
So it's very, very spiritual. Mm. And in AA, it's definitely like Jesus and all that. But I tend to lean more toward what you're saying and talking about. Like, it's about energy, it's about nature, it's about, you know, just feeling connected. And for me, like, so I'm going to sound like really heady right now, but I feel connected to the ground, and then I feel connected, like, to the sky. And that's what my spirit is. You know, it's just this, like, and when it gets, like, skewed is when I feel like shit. You know, when it goes this way or it goes that way. Anyway, there's a visual for you.
No, it's like chakras. It's like there's pineal gland, like third eye chakra. Then there's this one. This one is grounding. This one is this. This one is that. I can't really, I read the material and it goes in and out my head, but maybe that, I don't know.
But yeah, no, I think there is something to that for sure. And like, I'm sure it was something about your chakras. The little demon was probably living in your fucking
maybe
throat chakra.
right.
I believe, no, I do. I believe all that. I just don't feel comfortable talking about it, you know?
Because it makes you sound schizophrenic.
Right, or just, you know, wacky.
There's this guy called Bill Schneblin who, like, was, like, a high-level Freemason. And then, like, he thinks that Jesus saved him. And, like, Masonry is, like, having these ascended masters, like, bind to you. So these spirits bind to you, which are actually demons. But they whisper different secrets to you. And they give you magic powers. And he has this trippy, like, series of lectures on YouTube that I find fucking fascinating.
Yeah.
But one of the things he says that I thought, I was like, wow, and this is what Freemasons believe, that if you do something so profoundly evil, there's generational cursing from that. Like, if you, like kill a baby on an altar for Satan, or, like, do these rituals, and then, like, your kids will be cursed by this.
For sure.
Your grandchildren will be cursed by this, and you need to, like, you know, go to a spiritual place and, like, get cleansed of that to avoid this generational curse. And it's like, I wonder is it mental illness or is it demons? Like, if you had a bunch of demons and you saw a therapist, they would go, oh, you have bipolar, yeah. You have this, you have that.
It's just words, though.
It's just words. Yeah, it's rhetoric. So it's like, man, I wonder if my dad's, like, fucking fury. But it's just, if he raised me with, like, such anger all the time and blah, blah, blah. But then when I was in New Orleans, I got locked up and my dad, like, flew to New Orleans and, like, got me bailed out of, so I was doing, I was promoting a comedy show and I was putting posters up on telephone poles, and a meter maid saw me do this, and, I don't know, she confused my staple gun with a handgun, and I'm in grad school with getting perfect grades, and now I'm locked up.
Oh,
and I'm
shit.
Missing classes.
Oh, fuck.
So fucking, it's like, wait a minute. My life is over now. Like, I would literally have failed out of school. But he bailed me out. So it's like, he's capable of, like, these. When I called him from jail, like, he sprung into action and he did it. But it's like, I don't know. Is it somewhere? It's like, yeah.
It sounds like at his core, he loves you. And he, at his core, he has the good father aptitude. But I don't know him, but I think he has a fucking horrible alcohol problem.
Yes, yes.
And it's probably...
Yes.
It's probably what's making him such a dick.
Yeah, and, like, I feel like it's just... Alcohol, it strengthens his convictions while shortening his attention span. So instead of, like, listening to the situation, he will hear a fragment of what you're about to say, come to some dramatic conclusion that involves fire and brimstone, and it's like, you're just not listening. Like, yeah. I'm actually a good person. Like, I'm very goal-oriented. I'm not... Yeah. Like, I've, you know, that was the only time I've ever been arrested, and it was the most ridiculous thing ever.
It wasn't
like,
your fault.
Yeah, really. And like, you know, I don't know. So it's like, I don't know. Yeah, he does have this thing where he shows his love, like, in a dramatic aspect, but then it's like, when I was living with him, and maybe it was just like, he wasn't used to having someone, because like, nobody's lived with him for 7 years. The last person who lived with him was my brother. And this, again, alcohol, like, my brother was, like, working on a scholarship. So he goes to the University of Amherst for environmental science. Then he was going back for grad school for environmental science for his master's. And he was working on a scholarship essay. And my dad was drunk and listening to music, like, in his bedroom. There's two-bedroom condo. And he's like, Kevin, come over here. I want you to see something on the internet. It's really funny. And my brother's like, oh, no, I'm working on something. I can't see it. And he's like, no, come see this. It's really funny. Like, he discovered what a meme was, or like a GIF. You know what I mean? He discovered this from the seas of the internet, and he wanted immediate adulation for it because he was drinking. And my brother, like, was stern with him another time. He's like, no, I'm working on something, actually. And he goes, okay, you can leave. So he kicks out my brother.
Oh, my God.
Who... My parents both live in the same condo complex, so my brother packs up, you know, but he can't even finish the essay because he has a, what's it called, a desktop? He doesn't have a laptop, he has a desktop.
Yeah.
So he just flees to my mom's house, and then instead of, like, doing a scholarship essay, he was, like, kicked out of the house.
That's terrible.
Since that moment, he's never slept in my dad's house again. So it's like my brother, too. Like, when I was getting kicked out, I was like, call my brother. I'm like, what the fuck is...
Yeah.
You know? And so that's, me and my siblings have a great relationship because we know that both our parents are...
That bonds you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And if I didn't have my sibling, oh, my God. If I was an only child and I couldn't, like, be debriefed about this, where it's like, hey, I caught mom in a lie. What do you think about this? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And my sister's like, yeah, I know. Let me tell you what happened yesterday. Okay, now I'm, my grounded chakra has been struck
right.
back to earth.
Yes, yes.
Because I'm dealing with someone who will lie in a moment's notice to not lose face or to made to look a fool.
I in group we've talked about, like, cutting out. What do you do when you have to cut out a parent or a sibling?
Yeah.
Is that okay? You know, and it is a question, and there's no answer. Like, we learn all the time about, like, cut out toxic people, you know, surround yourself with people who make you feel good. And it's like, well, what if it's, you know,
yeah.
What if it's your dad?
And I feel guilty because it's like, this person broke me out of jail. Oh, so this is the other thing. So when I started doing my stand-up special, basically, when I was in Los Angeles, I was living in an office. So after grad school, I moved back to Los Angeles, and I tried to get a screenwriting agent, and it was just impossible. Mm-hmm. I got perfect grades. I sent out 400 hard mail letters, blah, 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 to every agent and manager in Los Angeles. I called every single one, emailed every single one, called them all again, emailed them all again, nothing. A friend of mine taps me on the shoulder, and he's like, hey, I got this camera. It's like a Blackmagic Cinemagic camera. It's like $5,000. You want to film, like, one of your screenplays? And I was like, how about my stand-up special? Mm. So I started planning this whole tour. My dad, like, wires me $4,500.
Damn.
And I immediately used it to, like, buy every hotel room I needed because I was like, okay, we'll drive 7 hours here. We'll do this show. We'll drive 2 hours. We'll do this show. As soon as I get to his house, oh, you should quit stand-up. Like, oh, let's get to brass tacks here. Like, your siblings are way better than you. Like, you're a loser, okay? I'm in Texas. Driving across the country filming my stand-up special. My mom had given me $1,200 from when I was 18 to 32. I'm in Texas filming. My mom's like, so when you get back to New Jersey, I really need that money back. Oh, you definitely got to be a big star. You definitely got to be a big star. Anyway, yeah, so I just need that money back. So my dad gives me $4,500. He's like, you're not going to make it. My mom's like, I need that $1,200 back. You're definitely going to make it.
That's... Oh, my God.
So do you see how they're, like, the exact opposite piece of garbage. It's like, nowhere is it like, here's money and you're going to make it. Mm-hmm. They're both the exact opposite. My mom's like, Chialita. Anyway, so you're going to drive. So I'm living at my dad's house. He's screaming at me all the time in a very abusive way. I'm working off my mom's $1,200 debt by driving her and her boyfriend to the airport. Like, they go to Florida every 2 months. I'm driving them, picking them up, dropping them off, picking them up, driving them off. Like, and I'm like deducting it.
Yeah.
You know? I said to my mom, this is so petty, but I go, Mom, I'll drive you to Florida. You got to cut down the amount of emails you sent me. Okay? You got to cut down the amount of emails. Send me one email with the itinerary, when you want to get picked up, when you want to get dropped off. She was like, okay, but remember, I want my slippers. Also, can you put water on my cactus? And then also, can you move a box from the... I go, one email, Ma. One email. When do you want to get picked up? When do you want to get dropped off? When do I have to water your fucking plants? What do I have to do? So I'm like deducting, because I want to be like, this is a receipt.
Yeah.
You can never come back later and say, I didn't fucking pay you your fucking $1,200 fucking dollars back. Mm. Blah, 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 blah. She sends me another one. She sends me 8 emails. I go, Ma, the next email is going to be $500. Boom. Another email. Like, within 15 minutes. So then, finally, when it was all done, I put the $184 cash, this email thing, I highlighted, this cost you $500. I gave her an itinerary and I picked her up. Actually, I didn't pick her up from the airport. I got her an Uber for her last one because I was going out of my mind. Because I also had to move, whatever. So I moved to Edison out of my dad's house. I couldn't also pick her up. So I got her the Uber, whatever. And then when she got home, she like had this money. And now I'm like, so like, she's always like, oh, well, when you become famous, you know, I'll be able to live in your beach, in your little pool house, and I'll hit on your pool boy, you know, that when you become famous, you know, Ray Romano has his mom lives in the back. And I'm like, you sold your stock. You sold your Eric stock. There's going to be none of that. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. Was that too petty? I don't know.
I think they're insane. I think they're insane. So there's no choice but to lose your mind too.
Yeah.
No, it's not petty. It's not petty when it's a million things, you know, and added up.
You know, and it's like she is actually she's very scatterbrained. And like if you go to her house, like it's very hoarded. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
It's like she might mentally not be capable to write one email of all the things. But it did come to a point where it was like she was fetishizing my servitude. Like she got very into my servitude of this debt. Mm. Me, and when I'm saying she's not reading the emails or like incapable of comprehending the email of like, send me one email with everything. Because then she would like wake up and go, oh, I'm going to regulate my own emotions. I'm going to send my son another thing that I want him to do.
Yeah.
Can you move my plan over here? Like, both my parents, I think, they regulate their own, instead of, like, reading books or exercising or doing, like, when they're giving advice or subjugating, that's when they feel better, because they're narcissists.
Yeah. Do they have friends?
Honestly, my dad, you know, he cut out his friend from kindergarten. He has one left, and then he has poker friends, but they only play poker. Mm. So he has one left, my Uncle Pat. But Uncle Jeff is cut out. And so it's like my dad's circle is just like...
That's a shame. What about your mom?
My mom, you know...
Does she socialize?
You know, that's tricky. It's like her sister is my Aunt Colleen, and they're like, one minute they're... My Aunt Colleen's like me. She's like a codependent. Mm. And she gets pissed off at my mom for being a narcissist. I really feel. And it's just that clear. Like, you go over to my Aunt Colleen's house, and not only is her house clean and spotless, but, like, then she'll cook, and she'll, like, when you go over to her house, it's, like, the turkey's carved and everything. Mm. You go to my mom's house, it's, like, she won't even take the fucking newspaper off the fucking kitchen table. And then it's, like, oh, I get, the meatloaf is cold now. I didn't know when you were coming over. It's, like, I said, remember I said 7, and now it's 7? Oh, I don't know. It's just like, you know, like that's how my mom is. And then my Aunt Colleen is like, she's up at 5 a.m. like fucking chopping arugula. Like, okay, I have 9 more hours until they come over.
Yeah.
So.
So what are your family events like? Is it like.
The best Christmas we ever had was my sister was living in Colorado and we had kids Christmas and we cut them out 100% and my sister hosted and my cousin, my Aunt Colleen's kids came over, my brother Kevin, his girlfriend came over, I came over, and we just had the best fucking Christmas.
That's brilliant.
Oh my God. We went skeet shooting, like we took, my sister has a shotgun, we took it around, we shot out plates. Oh my God. It was the greatest. Like,
why don't you do it every year?
Yeah, that's what we're, my sister's moving from Hoboken in a little apartment to like a big old house in Pennsylvania, and that's when that gets up and running, I think that is what's...
All right.
We'll definitely invite my Aunt Colleen, though.
Oh,
my Aunt Colleen's badass. She's fucking great. And, like, and my Uncle Jim, and they're like, you know...
Healthy people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're still together.
Yeah.
Sure, they're a little feisty every now and then, but, like... But they're, like, fun. They use comedy in a great way. Like, my Uncle Jim, like, my Aunt Colleen will be like, oh, what are you going to do the plates? And it'll be like, yeah, I'll do the plates so I don't have to hear you bitch about it. And like, but they're like literally just kibitzing with each other. And it's hilarious. And like, that's how they like blow off steam.
How do you feel about marriage?
Like, will I do it?
Just like in general, like what's your, what are your thoughts on it?
I think it could work, you know, and, like my last three girlfriends all cheated on me, you know? And one of my best friend, his brother, like, they had two kids together, boom, boom, five, and now they're, one is six and four, and the wife was just like, I'm gone, and just left him. She's like, I don't want no alimony, I don't want nothing, I'm with this guy now. And so, like, now the parents of my friend are, like, raising these kids and stuff, and it's just like, whoa, like, that can happen. Like, that's very exposed.
Yeah.
You're leaving yourself very exposed. So, I don't know. I would like to be married, but, like, with a prenup, like, this thick. Like, look, if this doesn't work out, you're getting, like, a fucking Greyhound ticket back home and a bologna sandwich, and that's, like, you know what I mean? We're not having kids, so it's like, what are you talking about?
You don't want
to
have kids.
No. You know, like, Ricky Gervais, he and his girlfriend, they're not married, but they've been together for 30 years, and they're practically, but it's like, yeah, it's like, I want to do stand-up, I want to write screenplays, I want to do that, like, and, like, you know, my sister's got kids, so it's like, I got the uncle thing going on, I think my brother will have kids, so it's like, until all their college is, like, in a trust fund done, like, why have more kids, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, I'm like, maybe I'll just pay for their undergrad, I don't know.
you don't have the, like, daddy itch.
No.
Not at all.
No.
Okay.
I think it's because, like, if I were to have kids, I would want to be, like, really good at it. And, you know, if I'm doing stand-up all the time, I just feel like I'll get home at 2 in the morning. I'll
wake
up.
What are you trying to say? This is what I do.
I don't know. I don't know what your life is like. For me, I don't know. You seem to have a good husband. You seem to...
My husband is amazing.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's also, that's all in my head. Because so it's like, maybe it would change if I got a spouse who, I don't know.
Yeah, I was supportive enough.
Right. I don't know. But I just don't think so.
Well, that's good. I think that that's good.
Yeah. There's a lot of people out there, right?
Yeah.
I would be into adopting, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a cool thing. That is a cool thing. We considered fostering.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of went through the process. We went through, like, the first round of things and then, you know, the first round of getting there. We got up to the point where the person was going to come and check out our house. The whatever. I forget the name of the thing. Lady. Man. Person.
The social worker?
Social worker. There it is.
Okay, yeah.
There it is.
You know, that's what my mom did. She's a social worker.
Oh, okay. In what area?
Dyfus for Morris County.
Okay.
I'm not really allowed. She signed a lot of non-disclosures. I'm not really allowed to talk about it.
Yeah.
I also think it made my mom crazy because she was dealing with crackheads all the time. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I'm in grad school. She's like, what the fuck are you doing? It's like, what? Like, she just had a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
She's been shot at when she's taking kids away from drug addicts. They suck a dog on her.
Mm.
She was already, like, not stable enough for that job at all. And then they threw her in it, so.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
My cousin is an attorney who works for, it's not called DIFAS anymore, Child Protective Services.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Division of Youth Child Protective Services.
Something. Yeah, it's really long. It's like CCBBAAR.
So they're a lawyer and they look into those cases?
Yeah. So she's an attorney who, she determines, she kind of determines if the child should be taken away from their parent. And I was talking to her about fostering, and she said, like, there's a lot of foster kids who end up perpetrating sexually, like, the biological kids of the, you know, they get the foster parents take in a kid, and then the kid
molests the
other siblings. And when she said that, I was like, nope, okay, bye-bye.
Oh, so she came in and with a clipboard and was like, let's look at your house, let's see if they
No, we hadn't gotten to that point yet.
Oh, okay.
We were going to move forward with that, and then...
Were you pregnant, or did you have a kid already?
We had our kid already.
Oh, okay, so then it's like someone's going to come in here and molest your kid.
Yeah, it was horrifying. Yeah.
And then you have your trauma that we talked about earlier, and you're like, that's not going to happen.
Right.
I'm going to protect my kid.
Yeah, and I'm not saying all foster kids would do that, but it happens, you know?
Yeah.
And the chance of that... I just couldn't.
It kind of makes sense in a way, if like you get this kid who's been molested themselves,
right,
and then
exactly.
they come into puberty, and then it's like,
yeah,
traumatic reenactment, you know.
And she said, she had said like she had a kid who was young, like six, who was doing things like horrible. You would not imagine a six-year-old to do, but to doing it to other kids, you know.
I mean, my mom wouldn't go into details, but she was like, you know, she went to this one house and they were prostituting the kids for drugs.
Horrible.
Like, they're like, oh, go in that room. My 12-year-old daughter will give you a blowjob and then you'll get... And then they went to go test and, like, I know this sounds fucked up, but there's, like, no way to get a sperm sample from a blowjob.
Yeah. No, it doesn't sound fucked up. It's a fact.
Yeah, so it's just like, there's no more evidence.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like...
You're dealing... Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, the dredge of society is just like, what the fuck?
And like, you want to help. Like, people want to help, but you can't... I just can't bring myself to do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this got dark.
This got real dark. Wow.
Well, not dark. I would say intense.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Hey, we're just... It doesn't always have to be yuck-yucks. Sometimes it's just... Man, I feel like I overshared... I just,
You know, that's my Instagram handle. It's Ange Overshares. I'm all about it. Please, lay it on thick.
Yeah, just like the whole situation with my dad. My sister told me that, like, he put Christmas money in an envelope for me. And, like, today I spent money. I'm seeing my sister tomorrow. Me and my sister are working on a screenplay together, and I'm going to hang out with her kids and stuff like that. So I'm going to visit her tomorrow, and she told me she's going to give me this envelope from my father. And today I wrote a letter where I'm going to send it back to him, like the money. Like, I'm not accepting this from you.
Mm.
You pay my cell phone. You screamed at me about this. You screamed at me about this. I'm not taking shit from you ever, because it goes on a list of things for you later to yell at me for.
Yeah.
I have this fantasy where, like, with my dad, like, I'm going to, like sell my special and get this crazy, like, money for it. And then I'm going to, like, pay his house. And then, like, epoxy to his wall. Like, who butters your fucking bread, cocksucker? Like, a poster, like, of me buttering his bread. And then, like, epoxy the deed to his house into the poster that I fucking bought for him. Like, that's... The level of vengeance I have is, like, really fucked up, but...
I would recommend therapy.
Yeah, I know. Probably I need to go back for this. But it's, like, for... Yeah, I probably need to.
What were you going to say? You said, but. Uh-oh. Who's resisting?
I'm resisting. No, it's like, for me, I feel like I'm actually, like, okay. Like, so I haven't spoken to my dad in a couple months now. And then when my sister, like, says, oh, there's an envelope of cash, I'm like, yeah, he would try to bribe his way back in. No, it's not going to happen. So then I've, for the last 3 days, have just been spiraling. Like, no, he thinks he's going to buy his way back in after all that? No. So I, like, wrote a letter to attach the money to. Like, that's what I did for the last 2 days. It's like, write this letter. Like, all my feelings. Remember this. No, that's not going to happen.
What do you think it'll accomplish?
Um, I don't know. I'm going to visit my Uncle Jeff Brzozowski. I moved to Edison, and my mom gave me his address, of the Brzozowski's address, and they literally live like two blocks away from me.
Oh.
And so when I get this money Saturday morning, I think I'm going to visit my Uncle Jeff. I'm going to knock on his door and talk to him about the way in which my father ended the relationship with him to get it accurate in my letter. Mm. I'm like a dark person where it's like, I visited Uncle Jeff, by the way. Oh, and here's what he said. Like, the letter's going to be so fucking clear. Like, so fucking... Like, he hasn't spoken to Uncle Jeff in like 6 years, but I will tomorrow. Mm. You know why? Because fuck you. Like, you think you can't buy your way back into my friendship after... I can't tell you how fucked up it was where when I was living with him and he was screaming at me all the time, if I said... I said to him, like, you can't yell at me. The way you yelled at me 2 days ago, you can't yell at me. He goes, you don't like it, you can leave. That was one of the times he kicked me out. For saying, you can't yell at me like that, I was kicked out. So there was no recourse. And then when I got there, I was literally... I can't tell you, I had no money. Not only did I have no money, but I owe student loans still. I haven't paid a fucking dollar of my student loans. I have credit card debt, you know, I you know what I mean? Like, it was impossible for me to leave, and then it was impossible for me to criticize, and the way in which he was abusing me on a day-to-day level with, like, financial blackmail, emotional blackmail.
Yeah.
Then he would be like, oh, I'll pay for your cell phone. Then he would yell at me about it. It was just like... so fucking maddening.
It's toxic.
Oh my god. Can we talk about your dad?
My dad is my guy.
He's your homie?
He's my homie.
He's your rock? He's your square?
Yeah.
What about your sister?
Yeah, we're all close. My sister is a recovering heroin addict. She went through a spell herself. But now she's good. And my dad is he's a pothead, redneck, kind of chill. he's a construction worker. He's just like a dude.
Yeah.
A dude, and we're really, really close.
You're all in Jersey?
We're all in Jersey, yeah. Yeah, the thing about this, everything that's happened, my dad had no idea that I was sick. He had no, like, mentally ill. He had no idea that I had a drinking problem or drugs. So this was like a huge blow for him. He thought that, because my sister was a heroin addict, my mom died of alcoholism. Mm-hmm. So for him, he thought that I was like the one that made it, that made it through. Mm-hmm. He knew about my past traumas, the sexual abuse, about Lewis, of course my mom, and he thought that I was just like hella strong, you know?
Mm.
And, when I was in the hospital for my suicide attempt, it was just, he was just broken, you know, I think it really affected him and hurt him. And then, so like I went to the hospital for that, and then I went to the psych ward. And then when I got out of the psych ward, I was supposed to be sober. Like, I had to be sober. They were drug testing me and everything. Because they thought that was part of the problem, and it was. And then I relapsed, and when I relapsed, my dad was just like, fuck, he just got so pissed.
What'd you relapse on?
Booze? I drank. I just fucked it up. And I did it on a whim, on purpose. Because I'm bipolar, and I'm impulsive as fuck. And it was literally like, I was coming from my outpatient program, and I just saw a liquor store, and I just fucking... and just went in, bought a bottle of Fireball, and drank the whole thing in the car.
Oh,
and then
my.
Drove home. and drove home thinking, like, I'm going to get away with this. Like, this is how, you know... And right away, Manny was like, were you drinking? And I was like, oh, yeah. And then they were like, oh, okay, well, now you have to go to rehab.
Right.
And I was not expecting that. Damn it!
I got consequences?
I had no idea. Yeah, fuck.
These built-in consequences where you have phone numbers to, if this, then do this, if this, then do this, and now those consequences are coming down?
What do you mean? Like
when your husband's like, oh, you were drinking.
Yes.
And then you're like, oh, yeah. And then he's like, oh, okay, well, now the hammer's coming down.
Well, what he did is he called my therapist. Mm. I went back to my outpatient, and my therapist was like, hey, you can't come here anymore unless you go to residential treatment. And then they, like, showed me this brochure, and they pitched me this rehab with horses and fucking a pool. When I get there, there's no horses and there's no pool. But
wait a minute. Wait, yeah, that's false advertising.
It was completely. The only reason I went was because of the horses. And there was no equestrian therapy. I was pissed.
Are they able to get that in the brochure?
I don't know. The horses left.
Were just walking by, like deer.
No,
there were horses.
There were horses. They were doing the equestrian therapy, and then by the time I got there, they weren't anymore.
Because the horses left.
Yeah.
They decided to go.
The horses were like, you know, these fucking addicts, brushing me all.
They're all manic, fucking.
But that's what you would do. You would brush them, and I just, oh, okay. I'm so pissed that I didn't get to brush any horses.
In Florida, you could have went to SeaWorld and, like, swam with the dolphins or something
Could have, but I was in treatment.
Oh, well.
I was locked up.
Put you in a short bus and send you over there.
There were actually a lot of people who jumped the fence and went to 7-Eleven and would, like, get a six-pack drink, come back.
Oh.
Or they had a dealer, they would, you know, get their fix and come back. A lot. There were a lot of people. It was so, like... It was so easy to do.
They would hop a fence, so there was like, there wasn't barbed wire on top or anything like that.
No, and really, you could just walk out. You could just walk out.
Right.
Like, you have to be there because you want to be there.
Mm.
But it was tempting.
I gotta tell you, the other thing, I think, I made it a week, and yeah, the cravings for beer were like, and I was having like propaganda beer night, like I was like having these dreams where like beer was like the savior of every situation. But the other thing, like, I took a chunk of my savings, so blah, 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 I saved up, you know, this chunk of money, like $2,500, and I put it into Robinhood, and I started trading stocks, blah, blah, blah. And at first, it's like immediately I won like $300, like boom. Like I was like trading penny stocks, and this penny stock like went from like 25 cents to 45 cents, and I like boom. But then like whatever. So I was like, hell yeah. And as it was ticking up, it was like my sobriety was like pretty safe.
Mm.
One morning I looked at it, I lost everything I earned. So instead of having $3,200 from the 25, it went from 30 to 32. I woke up one morning, it was at 19.
Oh, damn.
So it's like I lost not only my earnings, but then another $500. And then I was like I started like shake. And like I was like, okay, whatever. It's just another day. I'll like move the stocks around. I'll try to fix this problem. And then I drove a whole day of Uber. And then when I got home, I just drank. And it was like that was a trigger where it was like, because as long as I was on track to, like, okay, if I have to re-edit my special, I have this money, or if I have to go to a film festival, I can fly there with this money. And then it was like, oh, that was gone. And then I was like, ugh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is tricky. So now I'm, like, really cognitively, like, maybe I need therapy. But also I'm, like, you know, writing this letter to my dad, like, kind of is my therapy, you know? Yeah. And I'm, like, spending time, like, days on it to, like... It's a lethal weapon.
Here's what I would say. Like, yes, it is your therapy, but it's also like you're in it, right? So it's so raw for you that I wouldn't even say like therapy. I'm not going to say like, oh, you need therapy. But what I feel like I'm learning now is like it's good to have someone that's going to like a sponsor or like a therapist or like someone who can round you out, you know?
Right, because, right.
Because, like, that, like you said, like, after you give this letter, what happens next, you know? And you might need... You just need to be careful with yourself, you know? I'm not trying to, like, push therapy on you, but I would say, like, tread delicately.
No, and...
Be kind to yourself, you know? Because I feel like some things are going to happen. It's gonna stir up some shit.
Mm. Like sending the letter will like re-trigger me or re-traumatize?
It might do a lot of things. It might make things better, or you might feel better, or it might cause a huge fucking blow up. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, things like that, I'm glad I have a sponsor. Like, things that, like, are a big move that I'm, like, ready to make. Like, there's a sponsor being like, hey.
Yeah. And maybe it's just because I feel like such a level of injustice that my father inflicted this abuse onto me, that it's like, I want to inflict it onto him. But not inflict it, but just, like, really let him understand what it was like to go through that, and like what it was like to watch him scream at his other employees, like what it was like to watch him belittle people around us. Where when you're working with your father and they're belittling the other people, it's like I felt like my presence was like co-signing his awful behavior. Mm. Where it's like, I'm the boss's son, and the boss is screaming at you, and I'm not doing anything to stop it. But if I try to stop it, I'm going to get kicked out. So now I'm homeless. Where it's like, yeah. It was just like, it was so much where it's like, I feel like he like immediately forgives himself for it. I feel like he immediately goes like, well, I was justified because you were behaving like this. And it's like, there's no like, so I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, I need to do this.
I think that I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I think that, be careful.
Yeah, it's not the Lovey email from after doing ecstasy. It's definitely not that letter. Yeah. It's a good.
Yeah, I would say I just think like you. I think.
Am I in a manic episode?
No,
is that what's happening?
I think you're. I think it's a big thing that you're gonna do.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a big, and it may be really healing for you, but it also may be. It may cause some really. You don't know how he's going to react, you know?
Mm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to, like, drive him to suicide or anything like that. I don't want to drive him, like, that much. But it's, like, I do want to make him understand that, like, what he did was awful.
What's the worst thing that could happen? Like, what's the worst way he could react?
Like, commit suicide.
Would he do that?
I don't know. I don't think so. It's just, like... It's almost like there's something in his head where it's like he's not introverted. There's a word that I learned today that I wrote it down. Hold on. The word is anosognosia. Anosognosia is a deficient of self-awareness, a condition in which a person with a disability is unaware of having it.
Mm.
Anosognosia. And
that word should be way more common. That's very...
It's like all mental illness. Like, you know, when you're going through your manic episode where you're like in your bipolar, like manic throes, you're like, I'm on top of the world. And if someone's like, there's a problem, it's like, oh, you don't know what it's like to feel as good. You know,
yeah,
there's a problem. Yeah. No. You've never been on cloud fucking dive, motherfucker. I'm going to drink a bottle of Fireball.
Insane.
You know? And so, yeah, you don't know. And so, like, he so clearly has, like, if you look at what antisocial personality disorder, it's like he has every single thing. If you look at, like, narcissistic personality disorder, every single thing, including even gambling, which he's a complete gambling addict, alcohol abuse, he's a complete alcoholic. Like, even the little things where it's like, sometimes associated with this, it's like, check. Sometimes associated, check.
Yeah.
Sometimes this.
Textbook.
You know?
Do you say all of this? Do you tell him?
See, I could never, I like escaped, you know, and then I just cut him off.
Yeah, in the letter, I mean, in the letter.
Oh, yeah, I dropped that word, anosognosia. I dropped that word. He got his, bachelor's in, psychology, you know, so he's like, he's always like, oh, I'm working on myself. It's like,
oh, weird. He gets weirder and weirder the more.
You have no idea. But if you met him like day one, he would be charming as hell and like very nice and like very. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's like, and they say like the metadata of this diagnosis is like intense insecurity. He's so insecure that if you burst the bubble, it's like bah, you get the rage. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's like, whoa, why'd you do that? Why the fuck did I do that? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You don't know about this level of being a petty piece of shit. I did it because of integrity. And then I'll just abuse people. So, anyway, I'm sorry. I felt like I tried to go and interview and you.
You flipped the script.
You reached around.
I'm in a shit ton of therapy, so I don't need to talk.
You're in, like, group therapy all the time.
I'm, like, so done with talking about shit.
Maybe you're not allowed to say. We kind of have to sneak downstairs right now, but okay. I want to ask you, in Florida, mm-hmm. or in groups now, what was the biggest weird person?
The weirdest person?
Yeah. Without getting into specific details, so you could, like, you know, you got to keep them confidential and, like, it's alcoholic.
Does the psych ward count?
Yeah, sure.
It was a guy who was schizophrenic. His name was John, and his one eye went one way and the other eye went the other way. Neither of them could look at anyone. Sorry, that's horrible, but it's true. And he looked like Frankenstein. He had a square-shaped head. And he, one time we were, all you do is color there. That's it. There's no group. You just sit at a table and you color.
They give you crayons, you go inside the lines type of thing?
Yeah, and you just color coloring books. And there's also there's nothing else. There's just coloring. No, yeah, there's really nothing else. So we were sitting there, we're coloring, and I made, like, a friend. And she's, like, really cool black girl. She's sitting across from me. And we're, like, chatting, and then John comes over and he's, like, scary as fuck. He'll be like, Michelle, pass the rice. Like, he just sees people and fucking lives memories and talks to people. It's very strange. So he sits down next to me, and usually he doesn't sit down next to me. And he's so fucking crazy that he has a supervisor with him at all times. Mm. That like a nurse that has to stand by him and make sure he doesn't do anything fucking
like wild. Punch somebody or
I don't know, anything. Yeah, it could be anything. He's not violent, more like grab your tit. I don't know what he would do. Mm-hmm. So he's, like, sitting there and he's staring at my friend, and she's like, you know, we're kind of laughing. Cause
well, was he staring at her? Because with the one
looking
eye?
Right at her.
Okay.
Or something. I don't know. He's fucking. And he, this black girl, he looks at this black girl and he goes, "You look like a sweet little monkey." Oh. I've never seen someone like. She was, oh man, she goes, "Thank you."
It's like deeply racist, but almost from your perspective, like sweet.
It was very. And then he, like, got up and went to go over to her, and then he got escorted out. That was definitely the weirdest thing I've probably ever seen.
Was he going to try to pick her up like she was a little pet chimpanzee?
I have no idea. Or? Probably. You know? Yeah. I want to go in my pocket.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So that was that.
You want to play a little song about Buzz Buzz on your Fuzz Fuzz? What are you going to do tonight?
Tonight... No, I'm not going to do that one. I'm going to do a few other ones.
All right. Well, this has been episode 242 with Angela Sharp. It just flew by. This has been Highway Diary. And now for her music.
Have you ever been to their high school reunion?
Yeah.
One loser. Okay. This is a conversation I had on my high school reunion. Hello, old friend, I'm getting older too. Nothing would make me happier than to reminisce with you. Like, remember when we were nine, that game we used to play. Let's pretend we both had wieners, and we played that shit all day. Walking around like this, I'll be like, Alicia, look at my dick, I'll be like, and that's a good dick. I got one too, I'd be like, let's rub them together, cause I bet they'll cook a coop. And my mother walks and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm getting her pregnant. Mama grabs a wooden spoon and she smacks me in my butt cheek and my penis falls out. But it's not a real penis, just that cardboard thing from the paper towels. Anyway, it was nice chatting with you. Give it up for your host, Waldo!
Angela Sharp! Yeah. Hell yeah. And everybody say goodbye to cheese. Bye. This next comic, he has a podcast called Highway Diaries with Eric Hollerbach. It's Eric Hollerbach, everybody! Keep it going for Waldo Maldonado. He's too tall to be a midget and too short to be a hipster, a normal one, but he's right in the middle there. Everyone loves him. My favorite kind of girls are crazy girls. That's my favorite kind of girl. I love the crazy girls, you know? So I started getting on this, I got on this neo-Nazi dating app. It's called J-Hate. You ever get some anti-Semitic booty before? That's the best. They're like just, they always show up on time, and they're like, bah, bah, bah. Okay. I'm also on the Cutters board. That's a good dating app. I'm on the bipolar list. I like crazy girls. That's my favorite kind. Go fuck your mom, smoke pot, worship aliens. That's good myself. Bye-bye.
There you go for Eric, everybody.